All right. Well, welcome again. Thank you for joining us. We are seriously delighted that each and every one of you could join us this morning here and spend your Sunday morning with us, especially if you're visiting. We especially welcome you. We know that it is difficult to walk into a new church, especially if you don't know anybody. And so we commend you for that, and we hope you feel at home. We hope you connect with other people, and we hope that you connect with God here this morning. But we're doing something a little different with our Sunday morning teachings right now. And I want to explain that. So we felt that it was going to be very important this year to tackle some cultural issues. Okay, some things that our culture is wrestling with, things that may be confusing, different ideas that are influencing our world in significant ways. And what we're doing, especially this year, we thought it was really important this year in this potentially contentious election year to periodically grapple with some of those ideas. And so scattered throughout this year for about 3 weeks or so at a time, we're going to dive into one of those sets of ideas. And right now, we are diving into the set of ideas that could be described by the words diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI. Now, there are many different labels that you could use for this set of ideas. There's critical theory, there's social justice, or critical social justice, and a variety of others, but they all refer to this set of ideas that relates to the treatment of what are considered minority or marginalized groups of people. Different identity labels and how those identities interact. Now, these ideas are extraordinarily influential in our world today, extraordinarily so. And they permeate everything, and you see them everywhere. Actually, my teenage son has a summer job this summer, and he's working for a larger company that has hundreds of branches across the nation, and he just sent me these pictures yesterday that he took just of information that is around his store that is hung up in the break room or flyers that are distributed, and he's just receiving a lot of this in his workplace, and many of you can relate. And so you'll see up there, there's just you can't really read it, but poster on the left hung up in the break room, really detailing out Pride Month and talking about the history of it and encouraging engagement with Pride Month. And on the right, there's a flyer given out. You see the words or the letters DEI in the upper right corner, and it's just tips for being a better ally. And many of you are very familiar with this. In your workplaces, maybe in your schools, you perhaps have received very intensive DEI training, and you see this kind of language all over. Again, it permeates our world in really, really significant ways. And that's why we felt like we needed to discuss it. Okay, so we're going to take a few weeks here and just discuss it. Talk about what it is, and try to take the Bible and examine it. Okay, so that's what we're doing right now. So, with that said, I'm going to pray for us one more time, and then we'll dive into a few things. Lord, we thank you that you are here, that you speak, that you give guidance and wisdom. And Lord, what I would like to ask for, especially this morning and the next couple weeks, is that you would grant wisdom. God, we want understanding, we want wisdom as we think through dominant ideologies in our world today. Lord, we want your understanding of them. We want your thoughts. Your thoughts are higher than ours. So we acknowledge that and ask you to give us your thoughts. And I pray that in Jesus' name. All right, just by way of review, I want to review from last week. And so last week was a little bit of a preparation. We're going through 3 weeks on DEI, but last week was kind of week zero. It's preparation for these next 3 weeks and a little bit of preparation for a series that we'll be doing later in August as well. And so just to review from last week, I tried to take us through a couple of what I call tensions. just tensions that between different principles, values that I think we see in our world and even in the Bible. And those two tensions were these. Number one, this tension between unity and diversity. Now, we see unity and diversity within God himself. It's really pretty magnificent. As Christians, we believe in a Trinitarian God. And we believe that God is completely united. He is one. There's one God, and yet there are distinct persons within the Godhead. There's diversity within God as well. And so at the very essence of all reality, God himself, there is both unity and diversity. And his unity and diversity are expressed in the world, and he wants them to be. And in lots of different ways, unity and diversity are expressed, and even in culture. Different cultural identities are an expression, I believe, of God's diversity. And yet we need to keep those in a proper balance and understand that the diversity is good and distinctions among cultures are good and they shouldn't be just blurred or removed. And yet there is a universal humanity that we all share that unites us. And so we are maintaining both unity and diversity. And as we talk through this series and the next, that tension will present itself. Trying to maintain both of those well. The second tension I went through was this one. This is how I described it. There's a spectrum that I tried to lay out between what I called inclusion and core building. Okay, and this spectrum, I believe, plays out in a lot of different community settings, from very small communities to very large communities. And there is what I, again, would call a tension between inclusion and core building. On one hand, there is the desire to include people into a community. On the other hand, there is a desire to build strength and depth into that community. And this spectrum plays out, again, in a lot of situations. It even reflects to some degree, not perfectly, but to some degree, our political spectrum today. And so I just wanted to tease this out a little bit. Now, a quick clarification. I did want to just make clear that it's not like these two values are competing with each other. It's not like you're aiming for 50% inclusion and 50% core building, and any increase in core building takes away from inclusion. Actually, what I'm trying to get at is that we're aiming for 100% of each. And any growth in the genuine expression of one side will necessarily result in the genuine growth, the growth of the genuine other side. And so they are not competing, but they're very, very complementary. But the point that I was trying to get across is that these balancing values can be disconnected from each other. And when that happens, you drift to the extremes of the spectrum and things get very, very ugly. And you go to one side and you begin to abandon actually those core values that would support each side, and things can become unhealthy and even dangerous and destructive, authoritarian, and really, really bad. And so that was the point that I was trying to make. And so our goal is just to ask ourselves, where are we at in our community or the ideology that underlies our communities? Okay, are we in a healthy place? Is there appropriate balance between various biblical principles? Or is there a disconnect? And do you drift to one side and you're emphasizing core building so much that you abandon a desire to include others? Or are you drifting to the other side where you're emphasizing inclusion so much that you let go of truth? And then it becomes very, very exclusive. And that's just how it happens. Now, in August, we're going to go through a series that will mainly deal with some issues that are probably related more, at least generally associated with the right side of that spectrum. Right now, we're talking through some issues that are generally associated with that left side of that spectrum, diversity, equity, and of course, inclusion. And we're asking ourselves, where are we? Where is this ideology? And is there good? Is there health in this? Or is there a drift that has become very, very dangerous? That's what we're asking. And so we're diving in here to answer some of those questions. And so what we're doing is this, over this week and the next 2 weeks. This week, I'm just gonna try to explain. I just wanna explain this ideology of that's commonly labeled DEI. I wanna help us to understand it. So this is a little bit of a different kind of message this morning. I've actually wrestled with it a little bit because it's gonna be more just kind of educational than inspirational. But I think that education piece is necessary. Okay, if this permeates our world as much as I was describing it to, then we just need to know it, to understand it. So a lot of this morning is just gonna be trying to understand the key principles that support this kind of ideology. That's what we're going for this morning. Next week, we will get into assessment and evaluation. We're gonna take the Bible in, and we're really gonna try to take it through that biblical lens. So this week, I'm not gonna make a whole lot of commentary or anything. Next week is when we do that, and we try to understand it through the Bible. And then the final week will be, okay, what do we do? Okay, with any conclusions that we've reached, what do we do with this, and how do we live in our world in an appropriately inclusive way? And so that's where we're going. Quick kids question hint. Remember, we have our at least our older kids in the service throughout the summer. It's how we do things. And each week, we give them an opportunity to win a prize. This morning, we have Legos. Okay, and so this is a 3-in-1. So you get 3 prizes in one. We've got an exotic parrot, a frog, and a fish. Okay, so that's what we've got. And I'm gonna ask you a question at the end of the morning. And so the hint here is just write down any words that are in blue, that color blue. And those words are gonna be things really that we're aiming for, okay, that we want to build into our lives. All right, so why are we doing this? Why do we need to consider these ideas together? I want to give us, before explaining some of these ideas, I want to give us a little bit of the why we're doing this, why we're taking several Sunday mornings to talk through these ideas. I'm going to give you 4 reasons. Number 1, we are ambassadors of Christ as Christians, and ambassadors should understand the dominant ideology of their host country. So 2 Corinthians 5:20 says, therefore, we are ambassadors for Christ, God making his appeal through us. Okay, so part of our identity as Christians, we are ambassadors. An ambassador, of course, lives in a foreign land, but represents his or her home country and the values of that home country to that foreign land. Now, I think any ambassador is simply going to understand the thinking of the host country. So if you are an ambassador in Saudi Arabia, you're going to understand Islam. You're going to make efforts to understand how Islam characterizes and affects society. If you're an ambassador in Thailand, you're going to understand how Buddhism affects the society there. Okay, that's what an ambassador does. Now, I think this kind of ideology that we're talking about, this is sort of our national religion. There aren't other ideologies that can create flyers and have major corporations post them in their break room. But this ideology and a lot of the moral imperatives that are put forward can be posted. This, in many ways, is our national religion, and as ambassadors of Christ, I think we need to understand it. Number 2, this ideology became dominant very quickly and can be confusing, but we are called to consider thoughts and ideas and take them captive for Christ. I want to remind us of just how quickly our world changed in the last decade or so. I'm going to quote Yascha Mounk. He's a writer and sociologist. He wrote a book called The Identity Trap, which I would recommend reading. And he says, over the course of the 2010s, the American view of identity took a dizzying turn. In the span of a decade, ideas that had once seemed unlikely to escape the ivory tower transmuted into a popular ideology with real influence in the mainstream. At the beginning of the decade, terms like white privilege and structural racism were barely recognizable outside rarefied intellectual circles. We should remember so much of the very, very common familiar language that we have now was not at all familiar at the beginning of the 2010s. Let me give you some examples here of how thinking about these ideas grew. First, regarding race and racism, New York Times articles using the word racist increased by 700% between 2011 and 2019. Over the same period, the term increased by 1,000% in Washington Post articles. Now, racism has always been a topic of discussion in our country. Certainly it has, but it exploded in that decade. Let's consider other identity markers regarding gender and sexual identity. Just want to remind us of a few dates, a few important, what I think were kind of tipping points. In May 2012, President Obama expressed his support for same-sex marriage, which he had not previously done in his presidency. And so at the beginning of his first term, he said pretty unequivocally that marriage was to be between a man and a woman. But heading into his second term, he was able to say this. But what I want to point out here is just how remarkable it is that it was only in 2012 that a very popular Democratic president felt the political freedom to say this, where it wouldn't be political suicide. It was only 2012. That he could say that. Also, of course, 2015 was a big year. Our world watched the first public gender transition, where Bruce Jenner transitioned to Caitlyn Jenner. But it was in 2015. Also, of course, 2015, the Supreme Court decision that recognized same-sex marriage in every state. These things were less than a decade ago. Now, they do permeate everything, everywhere now, but they are very, very, very recent where we experienced that tipping point, and they became very mainstream. So I just want to remind us of how quickly this has progressed. So to quote Yascha Mounk again, says, the changes to America's elite culture that took place over the course of the past decade have been so rapid that they were virtually complete before most people even had a chance to understand their nature or their consequences. And I think that's very true. It happened so quickly, most of us didn't even know what to think, didn't even know what was going on. And it can be confusing. It feels like a lot of core principles that we all embrace seem to change. So for example, these can be confusing because these things are true or promoted today. Number one, colorblindness is seen as naive or even destructive. And so downplaying or ignoring racial differences, that is seen as the wrong tact. Or two, segregation actually today is often promoted, and it's promoted as a means of elevating minority groups. Or free speech is challenged more and more in our world today. Now, these are things that perhaps surprise or confuse many of us because many of us grew up thinking the opposite of these things was right. And now we're left thinking, what's going on? I thought I was supposed to be kind of colorblind and I was supposed to champion integration, and we fought those battles way back in the 50s and 60s and that's what I'm supposed to do, and free speech is a value that we're supposed to hold on to, and those things aren't right, and so it can feel confusing. But we're supposed to understand these things. 2 Corinthians 10:5 says, we destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God and take every thought captive to obey Christ. So take every thought captive. I think that means that we're supposed to consider the thoughts, the ideas out there, and make sure they are in submission to Christ's ideology. Make sure they fit under his kingdom values. Number three, unity is especially important to God, and we should analyze anything that could potentially challenge unity. And as everybody's grappling with these ideas, it could certainly sever relationships. But we must pursue unity fervently. Philippians 2, 1 through 2, so if there is any encouragement in Christ, any comfort from love, any participation in the Spirit, any affection and sympathy, complete my joy by being of the same mind, having the same love, being in full accord and of one mind. That doesn't mean complete uniformity of thought, but it does mean that there is a like-mindedness that we are supposed to champion and protect. And then finally, number four, ideas like diversity, equity, compassion, and justice are very biblical categories, and we need to understand what they are and how to pursue them. Okay, Micah 6:8 is a famous verse. Part of the reason I named one of my sons Micah, he has told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God. The Bible commands us to do justice, and so we've got to understand what justice is and how to do it well. Okay, so I am going to try to explain this very popular ideology with the rest of this morning. Now, a couple caveats. Number one, I am only going to scratch the surface. I mean, this is so big. And as I've tried to dig into it, I've just realized how big it is. You know, sometimes you read a book or two on a subject and you think, I got this. It's pretty easy. I think I have my mind around this. And then you read the third book and the fourth book and you start to think, huh, I don't know about this. And then you get to 10 or 11 or 12, and sometimes you can feel lost. Like it's just such a big area of knowledge and opinion. Now, I've been trying to dig into this actually for quite a while now, and read a wide breadth of thoughts on this, but in some ways I'm still scratching the surface, and I'm definitely only going to scratch the surface this morning. And I wanted to lay out a little bit more of the history of this ideology, the different streams that came together over the decades to form this river. I'm not going to get into the history and the origins really at all this morning. We just don't have time. It might be a little dry anyways for a lot of you. We're just going to try to describe what we have now. But that said, that we're only going to scratch the surface, I did want to encourage you to dig, encourage you to go beyond this morning and try to understand it for yourselves. I'll just recommend a couple resources. These two books, one, A Critical Dilemma by Neil Shenvey and Pat Sawyer. And this book, I think, you know, at least from what I've read, to have a Christian perspective, a description and assessment of this ideology, I think this would be my go-to resource, Critical Dilemma, and it's a little heftier. It's about 500 pages, but it's not a difficult read, I wouldn't say, and it would be well worth your time. I would certainly recommend reading that. There's also a different kind of book called Cultural Identity and the Purposes of God. And this is more of a theological exploration of ethnicity and cultural identity in the Bible. So it kind of marches through the Bible and tries to tease out how the Bible approaches ethnicity and cultural identity. So pick up those books. But what I'm going to do now, like I said, explain the key tenets of this way of thinking. And what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to steal a framework from Neil Shenvey and Pat Sawyer out of Critical Dilemma, because they tried to distill this whole way of thinking down into four key principles. So I'm just going to take their four key principles. I didn't feel like I could do it better than they do. And then I'm going to expand on each one of those four. And so here are the four key pillars of this kind of ideology. And I'll explain each one of these. Number one, the social binary. Number two, hegemonic power. Number three, lived experience. And number four, social justice. Okay, some of those words may sound familiar, but we're going to go through them one at a time. And hopefully at the end of this morning, at least have some basic ideas in our minds so that next week we can really tackle them with the Bible. Okay, so number one, the social binary. Society is divided into oppressed and oppressor groups along the lines of a variety of identity markers, including race, class, gender, sexuality, physical ability, and so on. Okay, so this is pretty familiar, I assume, to most of us. There is this social binary, and there is the oppressor slash dominant group over the oppressed or subordinate group, and that society is generally broken up into this kind of binary. Now, to make a couple points to further explain this, let me say these things. Number one, an understanding of how power dynamics affect different identity groups is very, very important. So there's this real focus on identity definitions and categorizing different circles of identity, but specifically those identity circles that relate to power dynamics. Okay, so what identities seem to be oppressed by other identities? That's the real focus. Number two, the dominant group often has unearned advantages or privilege. Again, very familiar words here. There's privilege, unearned, that the dominant group tends to experience. So we could go back to my son's flyer that he got at work. And the second point there, understand that privilege doesn't mean you didn't work hard or struggle. And so they're trying to explain this concept and maybe diffuse some of the objections to the concept of privilege. It means that there are some things in life that you don't have to think about or want to experience just because of who you are. Okay, so this idea of privilege is very, very key, that the dominant group experiences unearned advantages. And then number three, intersectionality describes the possibility of belonging to multiple oppressed groups. Again, that's probably a term you've heard a lot. Intersectionality, it is very, very important. But we can belong to multiple identity groups. And when we belong to multiple subordinate or oppressed groups, there's an overlap there. There's an intersection. And so a female can be in a subordinate group because the males are in the dominant group. Also, a homosexual can be in the subordinate group because heterosexuals are dominant. But a homosexual woman has two intersecting circles of our identity and puts her in a different place. And she has different experiences because there's an accumulation of oppressed identities. Now, this idea of intersectionality also serves to tie a lot together. Okay, and so we see that this is a pretty comprehensive ideology here. Let me quote Susan Farr, who's an author and social justice advocate. She says, "It is virtually impossible to view one oppression such as sexism or homophobia in isolation because they are all connected. Sexism, racism, homophobia, classism, ableism, anti-Semitism, ageism. To eliminate one oppression successfully, a movement has to include work to eliminate them all, or else success will always be limited and incomplete." And you will find similar statements to this all over. Just all over, that these things are very, very connected. The goal is to eliminate oppression in general, not just to focus on one form of oppression, but oppression in general, and so they are all connected together. Okay, second pillar is hegemonic power. Okay, so you may have heard that word. This is kind of a new word that has entered the popular vocabulary, hegemony. Nobody outside of academia said that word until a few years ago, I think. But this is very important as well. So hegemonic power, societal norms that allow for the dominant class to maintain power over the subordinate class. Okay, so we've got our social binary here. There's the dominant group, and then there's the subordinate group. But what's in that line? That's the whole question. What's in that line is the hegemony, the hegemonic power. And that line includes values and customs and standards and knowledge. It's everything that goes into building a society that keeps the two groups in their proper place. It's everything that goes into that. So, what does that mean? Let's expand on that a little bit. Number one, racism is no longer defined in the traditional way. So traditionally, a racist was someone who had very clear ideas about the superiority of one race over another and perhaps acted on that. Well, it's different now. Racism really describes that set of norms. Okay, it's the hegemonic power. And so we can participate in racism even unintentionally or unknowingly as we just support that hegemony. Okay, as we just live a part of that, we can carry out racism, really. And so it's a little different. So whiteness is not referring to a skin color. No, it's referring to a set of norms and ideals that have allowed generally white people to maintain a dominant position. Okay, so that's racism has been redefined to an extent. Because racism is seen to be structural in nature, it permeates nearly everything. Again, you can unknowingly participate in this. It is everywhere. I'm going to quote Derek Bell. He's considered the godfather of critical race theory. And he was speaking these things in the 70s and 80s and beyond. And he says this, racism is an integral, permanent, and indestructible component of this society. Racism lies at the center, not the periphery, in the permanent, not in the fleeting, in the real lives of black and white people, not in the sentimental caverns of the mind. And again, this statement would be a very, very common kind of statement, that racism is everywhere, and sometimes it's even hard to see. It's hard to know that it's happening. So number three, to overcome oppression, societal norms that support the hegemony must be dismantled or proved arbitrary. You know, that many of those norms may be socially constructed, they're arbitrary. Or they need to be taken away, dismantled. And so advocates can say something like this. Mari Matsuda said, critical race theory expresses skepticism toward dominant legal claims of neutrality, objectivity, colorblindness, and meritocracy. What she's saying is that there are these values that characterize, especially American society, that maintain that hegemonic power. Okay. So for example, meritocracy. This is the idea that I get what I earn. Yeah, I reap what I sow, and so I merit some position. And it's very traditionally very American idea that there is merit. But the idea here is that meritocracy actually is part of that hegemony that allows the groups to stay in their positions, because somebody in the dominant group can say, I earned this. I'm here because of the work that I put in. And someone in the subordinate group did not put in that work. So these ideas keep people where they're supposed to be, is the thought. And so these concepts, like neutrality, objectivity, colorblindness, and meritocracy, are used to maintain the hierarchy, and so there's great skepticism towards them, and there's a desire to remove them. And then fourth, the subordinate group is dominated by consent. Okay, and so this is the magic of it all, that hegemony is created in such a way that those in the subordinate group receive it. Okay, they can receive it and kind of validate or own it. So somebody in that group could say, "Yes, I have merited my position. Okay, that's where I I belong. And so there's this understanding that this is how it should be. So they have conceded. Okay, number three, the third pillar is lived experience. The idea that oppressed people have innate authority and special access to truths about their oppression due to their experiences. Okay, so this is pretty important as well. Remember, we have this kind of hierarchy and this binary, and there's this hegemonic power that maintains that binary. Well, the thought is with lived experience, the experiences of those that have been oppressed, that those experiences can supplant those traditional norms. Okay, so there's knowledge produced, and you'll hear that, the production of knowledge. There's knowledge produced through lived experience. Okay, people that have special access to knowledge about oppression, those who have actually experienced it, they have that special knowledge, and they therefore can bring new ideas that can replace those ideas that maintain the hegemony. And so they supplant what is traditionally there. So experiences reveal systems of oppression so that they can be removed. Number two, there is skepticism that members of different identity groups can truly understand each other. So the thought is it's really hard, maybe impossible for somebody in the dominant group to really understand the subordinate group and their experiences. Therefore, they must listen and give authority to the subordinate group. So great authority is given to the experiences of the oppressed. And then finally, an emphasis is placed on alternative ways of knowing based on intuition, emotion, and storytelling. Okay, so we need to access the understandings of the subordinate group so that we can understand things better. Let me quote Charles Lawrence, a law professor. He says, "We must learn to trust our own senses, feelings, and experiences and give them authority, even or especially in the face of dominant accounts of social reality that claim universality." You know, often DEI or critical theory is described as some version of cultural Marxism. And there's a reality to that. There are definitely some overlapping ideas, this whole social binary and this subordinate group and this dominant group certainly has roots in Marxism. But others would say that's a little too simplistic, a simplistic way of looking at it, that it's much more postmodern. And this is where the postmodernism sort of comes in, where there's skepticism towards traditional ways of knowing because those ways of knowing are so influenced by power dynamics. So they're not that trustworthy. And so we need to discover new ways of understanding, and we do that especially through experiences. Experiences of those who have experienced oppression. We can go back to our little flyer. Tips for being a better ally: own your learning journey and practice developing empathy for others. You see this great emphasis on listening and understanding and mining from those who have experienced oppression. Then the fourth pillar is social justice. And we'll just describe this as specifically as action. Action taken to eliminate structural oppression in order to liberate oppressed groups. Okay, so we have our social binary. But the lived experiences replace the hegemony, and that results in everybody being on equal footing. So from this, the goal is equity, equal outcome, rather than mere equality or equal opportunity. Again, these are terms that you probably hear a lot. So equity is the goal, that everybody can be in the same social position. We're not just going for equality of opportunity, but actually the results. That's what we're aiming for. That's what we're considering. And if we're aiming for equity, this may require unequal treatments of groups. Okay, so there may be a special treatment given to a disadvantaged group in order to bring them into an equitable situation. Okay, so there's a justification for unequal treatment of groups. And then thirdly, intentional action is necessary. Okay, so this is again very action-oriented. Last half of the 20th century, it was a lot of theory. You'd have professors talking at their universities and just pontificating. But now it's very, very action-oriented. And I'll give you a quote here from Ibram. I think there's a typo there. Ibram X. Kendi, in his very famous book, How to Be an Anti-Racist. And this book has been very influential in recent years. He says, "What's the problem with being not racist? It is a claim that signifies neutrality. I am not racist, but neither am I aggressively against racism. But there is no neutrality in the racism struggle. The opposite of racist isn't not racist, it is anti-racist." And so there's not neutrality there. Either you are, perhaps unwittingly, being a part of and supporting that social hegemony, or you are actively trying to dismantle it. Okay, so there's a lot of action in this. And so, going back to our flyer again, remember that ally is a verb. It is not a self-appointed title or noun. Saying you're an ally is not enough. You need to show up and support others through action. Again, that type of statement you will see quite a bit. We actively need to remove racist systems, oppressive systems. Okay, so that's the summary that I wanted to go through today. Thank you for doing that hard work with me here. I just wanted to go through some of those terms and ideas and get them in our heads some so that we can take a hard look at them next week. And I hope getting some of those ideas in your head starts you to think about them and starts to consider how they align or do not align with what God gives us in his word. But we're going to get into that next week. Remember, this was the explanation. Did that hard work. Next week, assessment, and the following week, application. Now, a couple other things. Number one, we're going to get to our kids' question. Okay, so remember, this is for kids ages 7 through 12, and you can only answer if you have not received a prize yet this summer. Okay? And so I'm going to ask the question, and remember, you're just writing down words that were in blue, and if you can tell me those words, you'll get the prize. And so when I put up, that's really the question. So once I put up the question, I'm gonna see whose hand goes up and try to see who puts it up first. Okay, what were the key words today? Okay. All right, we'll go with Luke here. You can tell your name and your age.
I am Luke, and I am 9 years old, and the words are ambassadors, obey Christ, one mind, and justice.
There you go. Nice job. All right, you can come grab this. Okay, now as we wrap up here, and actually, Ben, you can go ahead and make your way back up here, but we are going to finish by just reading a passage together. And we're going to read Proverbs 2, 1 through 15. If you have a house Bible, it's on page 528. And I simply want to read through this passage with you because this is a call to wisdom. And it's an offering of wisdom. God is offering wisdom to us. He says it very clearly in James chapter 1 that if we ask for wisdom, we receive it. God grants us wisdom. And what we're doing right now is we're trying to discover wisdom, trying to glean from God's wisdom about some complicated, potentially confusing ideas. That's what we're doing over these 3 weeks. And so I want to just read Proverbs 2, 1 through 15 together with you, and then we're going to sing one more song and be done for this morning. My son, if you receive my words and treasure up my commandments with you, making your ear attentive to wisdom and inclining your heart to understanding, yes, if you call out for insight and raise your voice for understanding, if you seek it like silver and search for it as for hidden treasures, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He's a shield to those who walk in integrity, guarding the paths of justice and watching over the way of his saints. Then you will understand righteousness and justice and equity, every good path. For wisdom will come into your heart and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will watch over you, understanding will guard you, delivering you from the way of evil, from men of perverted speech, who forsake the path of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice in doing evil and delight in the perverseness of evil, men whose paths are crooked and who are devious in their ways. God is offering us wisdom as we dig in, as we try to discover his wisdom. He fills in. And he helps us to understand specifically even things like righteousness and justice and equity. And so that's what we're trusting for over the next 2 weeks.